This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. We're live again at the National Religious Broadcasters Convention at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. You can hear the noise in the background. Lots of activity here. Christian communicators from all over the world come here to this largest gathering of religious broadcasters. Great, great, great event. All right, coming up on this Thursday edition, this morning I spoke about the need for religious broadcasters to seize this rare moment in history that we are witnessing. If you'd like to see that short message, you can go to TonyPerkins.com. I was then privileged to join a panel discussion with Todd Starnes, Larry Elder, Dennis Prager, both of Salem Communication, and Marjorie Dannenfelser of Susan B. Anthony List, on how big tech companies are moving to censor conservative and Christian speech. The problem has become so prevalent that the National Religious Broadcasters is mounting a major counteroffensive in defense of free speech. Dr. Jerry Johnson, who is president and chief executive officer of the National Religious Broadcasters, will be here to talk about that effort in just a moment. And Dr. Carol Swain, a friend and someone you've heard frequently on this program, former law professor at Vanderbilt University. She has three Prager University videos that are up. One of those was restricted. One about the true history of the Democratic Party. That sounds odd. And finally, Vladimir Putin is making headlines around the world by announcing that Russia has developed a new first-strike nuclear missile and state-of-the-art hypersonic underwater torpedoes that make NATO defenses completely useless. Best-selling author and I'd almost call prophet Joel Rosenberg will be here to talk about that and his new book that is coming out next week. The name of that new book? Are you waiting? The Kremlin Conspiracy. That's coming up here on this edition of Washington Watch. If you miss anything on your way home, well, you can catch it later at the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. All right, a conservative media company has sued YouTube, saying that the online video giant illegally censors the short videos it produces. PragerU, founded in 2011 by Dennis Prager, a prominent conservative writer and radio talk show host, he says that some 40 of his videos have been blocked. The company filed the suit last year, saying that YouTube had been restricting some of their videos, which cuts them off to viewers with certain parental settings and prevents them from generating ad revenue. With us now is my good friend and frequent host here, guest host of Washington Watch, Dr. Jerry Johnson. He is president and chief executive officer of the National Religious Broadcasters, an international association of Christian communicators whose membership and organizations reach millions of viewers, listeners, and readers worldwide. And he is the kingpin behind this gathering this week. Jerry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, welcome to NRB, Tony. Of course, you're a member. You're in the house. You're in your home here. You're part of what we're doing. But welcome, listeners, to NRB. We're bringing you to the floor. You hear the buzz in the background. It's an exciting place.
It really is. A lot going on. The vice president was here yesterday speaking. A great validation of the work that you're doing. But this is something that you see as a problem on the horizon, and National Religious Broadcasters is taking a leading role in bringing together the voices of religious broadcasters to fight this censorship that's being conducted by the left through these big tech companies.
Tony, we've been working on this project for about a year, and what happened in the last month was that NRB TV, our television station, was blocked by Google, and
which is the parent company of YouTube.
That's and so they said it was objectionable content. We've asked them, you know, what was it? Why was it? We haven't heard the answer yet. They just put us back on. But I think it's just when these liberals in Silicon Valley hear something they don't like, they just take you off the air.
Talk about, this is not just a flash in the pan. It's not just one incident here or there. You've actually gone back and you have, over the last almost decade, as more and more people become reliant upon these social media platforms.
That's right.
You're showing, you've established a pattern.
Yeah, we've got a timeline. Your listeners can go to internetfreedomwatch.org, internetfreedomwatch.org, and there's a long timeline. And it begins, Tony, in 2010 with Chuck Colson, the Manhattan Declaration.
Right, I was a part of that.
And Apple kicked them out of the App Store. That was really the first big example.
I remember that.
The most prominent recent example is a sitting member of the U.S. Congress, Marsha Blackburn, announcing her Senate campaign, mentioned the sale of body parts, and Twitter deleted that tweet.
Right.
I don't think the founding fathers had that kind of censorship in mind when they framed the First Amendment.
No, and the point that was made this morning, Dr. Johnson, in the session was that these, you know, people say, well, these are private companies. Well, but they're holding themselves out as the really the keeper of the virtual public square.
That's right. Well, they need to be shamed, first of all, because they do say that, oh, this is the world community. This is the American community. Well, not for everyone. And, you know, when you've got someone like Prager University, Alan Dershowitz, he's not a Christian. He's not a conservative. He's actually a liberal. He made this pro-Israel video, this anti-Palestinian terrorism video. You know, they booted him off of YouTube as well. And so it's interesting, Tony, it's our 75th anniversary, and NRB began because of
right.
industry censorship,
right. Absolutely.
Private industry censorship 75 years ago with radio companies that were privately owned.
And a lot of that dealt with the issue of communism.
Well, that's right.
There were a lot of preachers that were taking on the issue of communism and its infiltration in this country. The big media, the private companies didn't like that. They began to censor, and that's what we see happening now.
Well, so what happened 75 years ago? They took these evangelical preachers off the air, put some liberal, sort of left-leaning preachers on the air, and NRB was formed. These evangelical preachers got together and say, let's go to Capitol Hill, let's go to the FCC, let's go to Congress. Within 2 or 3 years, we were all back on the air. Well, it's time again to rally because these are private companies. But they're saying they're open. They're saying they're fair. You know, they're the ones championing net neutrality, so-called.
Right.
Well, they're not neutral.
Anything
they're very biased. They're very biased.
That was the first sign to me that it was not a good policy. When you look who is championing these particular policies, who are enemies of free speech, you know you're on the other side of the issue.
Well, now they've taken Mike Huckabee off Facebook. They've taken Todd Starnes off of Facebook. It's not just you and me. Dr. D. James Kennedy was kicked out of the Amazon Smiles, you know, the
right,
gift matching
right,
program.
Right.
So this is really ubiquitous.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Again, broadcasting live from the floor of the convention at the National Religious Broadcaster, Dr. Jerry Johnson, who is the president and CEO of NRB and kind of the head honcho here this week. And let me talk about this for a moment, because this story came out earlier this week that YouTube has this group, I think it's about 100 people, that monitor
That's
these
right.
videos, and they'll flag them. They operate with anonymity. They have this non-disclosure form that they sign. Well, it was uncovered that at least one, could be more, are associated with the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an anti-Christian organization that has been labeling Christian groups as hate groups. Is it any wonder, then, that we're seeing this Christian content tagged by YouTube and taken off or restricted so that certain people can't see it?
Now, Tony, we started documenting this about a year and a half ago, and it was these incidents of Starnes and Huckabee and so forth. And we knew we were onto something, but we didn't know what was back of that. And what's happened this year is we've had employees come out,
right,
sort of official leaks, and sometimes official statements they actually do now have. All these companies now have screening committees, anonymous screening committees.
And they're not made up of conservatives.
No, and not even folks that are neutral.
Yeah.
They're made up of people who, in all cases, don't understand us, but in most cases are actually against us.
And what's interesting, there was a survey, a public policy survey that was done earlier this week that showed that now a majority of Americans, 55% of Americans, would like to see the government regulate big tech companies. Even among Republicans, who generally are not for regulation, they see what's happening.
You know, when we launched this at the National Press Club, Ted Cruz, the senator, had a tremendous idea, and that is, you know, Congress by law gives coverage to phone companies and electrical companies. They're not held liable if someone plans a murder over the phone or, you know, electrocutes someone with the power system because it's an unbiased service that they offer. But if these tech companies, because they do now provide that on to internet providers and to edge providers like Yahoo and Facebook and Twitter, they can't be sued, you know, if someone plans a murder on their social media site. But if they're going to filter their site, if they're going to censor their site, yeah, it means there's tacit approval of, Cruz is proposing, perhaps Congress ought to lift those protections. If they're going to start censoring content, they should not enjoy the protection of neutrality because they are not neutral.
Very, very good point. Again, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Dr. Jerry Johnson, my guest, he is the president and CEO of the National Religious Broadcasters. All right, what's the plan? What is the counteroffensive? How are we going to defend the first freedom?
Well, we've got to go to internetfreedomwatch.org. That's the first thing. Your folks just need to see what's going on. And there's a place for them to enter their story. We're finding out common people have had their Facebook posts removed. We want to document all this. Number two, I think the Cruz strategy is a very possible track. We want hearings in the Senate, hearings in the House. But right now, we just need to shame these folks and say, you claim to be about community and openness in the public square. You're not. Let's first just call them to do the right thing together.
Yeah, absolutely. And if folks do that, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, and by all means, let us know your story. I mean, as Jerry says, the more we can talk about this and show that this is happening across the board, the more powerful our message and our counter effort will be. From a standpoint of the future of the freedom of speech for religious broadcasters, what's on the horizon?
Well, I think we see what's on the horizon. This is the medium of the future. It's actually now, but it's the future, and it's not looking good. If people don't join Family Research Council, people don't get involved with NRB, I mean, we, as Franklin said, you know, we're going to have to hang together,
right,
or we will hang separately. I've got to say, though, there's hope. The FCC commissioner sent a message to NRB saying he knew this was a problem. We played the video yesterday.
Ajit Pai, great guy. Great guy. We can win this.
We can.
But I think Christians need to realize that this is not just political speech you're talking about. This is not about activism. This is the gospel.
That's right.
That's what's at risk in this, because to those who are enemies of the light, the gospel is offensive.
Amen. And that's the reason the First Amendment has religion, speech, and press all together.
All right. Dr. Jerry Johnson, doing a great job. Thanks, Tony, for hosting us this week.
I'll be back.
Great to be a partner with you.
All right.
Dr. Jerry Johnson, President and CEO of the National Religious Broadcasters. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. They're doing a great job collectively as we speak together. We can preserve that freedom. All right, I want to welcome our Facebook Live folks that are watching on Facebook, and you can do that as well if you're near Facebook. We're going to be broadcasting the rest of the program. Still to come, we're going to have a lot more to come. I got Joel Rosenberg. He's going to be joining us. And next is Dr. Carol Swain, my favorite professor. Don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch from NRB after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, broadcasting live from the convention floor of the National Religious Broadcasters here in Nashville, Tennessee. So if you're just tuning in, you're going to hear a lot of background noise. It's because we're right here in the middle of everything. This is the largest gathering of religious communicators from around the world. I've spoken to folks from all different countries, different types of communication, radio, television, new media. So it's a great, great gathering. All right, I want to continue this conversation about the censorship of conservative ideas on social media. Now, this is very important because, you know, the social media has kind of become the platform. As we were talking about earlier, you know, YouTube, Facebook, different ones, they hold themselves out as now the virtual public square. Well, you know, everybody has a right to free speech, but there's evidence, mounting evidence, that they're picking. I mean, they're actually kind of the ticket takers, saying, well, do you have a conservative ticket or a liberal ticket? If you have a conservative ticket, you can't come in. That's not free speech, and we all suffer. And I talked about that this morning. When an element of society is not given civil speech, I'm not talking about threats and stuff. I'm talking about civil speech discussion. When that is cut off and they're repressed, it leads to disastrous outcomes. Joining me now is a good friend of ours, Dr. Carol Swain, award-winning political scientist, a former professor of political science and professor of law at Vanderbilt University. Dr. Swain, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
It's great to be here, Tony.
You've experienced this. In fact, Dennis Prager was on the panel this morning that I spoke on, and he was talking about 40 of his PragerU videos have been tagged by YouTube and restricted. One of them was yours. You're a controversial figure.
Yes, and I believe the first Prager University video I did with Dennis that was released last year was briefly flagged, and now the second one is on the list of 40 videos, and it's how the South became Republican. So there's something in there that the political left doesn't want our young people to see and know.
Now, why would a message from an African-American educated political scientist Why would they want to restrict that content being delivered to America's youth? Which, by the way, the average viewer, it's under 35, is most of the viewers on YouTube. So you are actually reaching the younger generation.
Well, the first video reached 17.2 million people, and the one that they've currently restricted has reached over 9 million, and then there's a new one that's reaching 6 million. I get emails, and I run into people all the time that have seen those videos, and some of them that are African American are switching parties. And so that's very threatening, and most people didn't know, or they don't know, you know, the true story about the South and the Democratic Party. So this is scary stuff for the political left.
It is, but also as
truth is scary.
Yeah, truth is scary. They don't like the truth. But this shows how powerful the truth is, and especially the way you delivered and your story. Stories are powerful. We hear all the time, especially young people, you know, what's your story? We want to embrace your story. Well, you have a wonderful story, a powerful story, a compelling story, but apparently there are some that don't want that story to be heard.
I've always struggled, I think, with the ability to get my voice heard. And Facebook, a couple of years ago, they shut down my page for about 3 hours, and then Breitbart heard about it, and there was a Breitbart article, and calls were made to Facebook, and they backed down. They said it was a mistake. And I currently, on my Professor Carol M. Swain page, I have over 45,000 fans. I mean, my whole social media profile, Facebook, you know, could shut me down, or Twitter could shut me down, and I would have no means other than when I'm invited to be on national TV to communicate with my audience. My platform could be erased overnight by the political left if they wanted to do that.
Right. And that's the point here, is that they have held themselves out as being the new, you know, public square, the virtual public square where people come to have discussions. But there is not this, you know, objective standard of civility. And I do believe we should be civil, and you are. So I don't think that we should allow threats or things like that. But this is an ideologically driven agenda where they don't want to hear that message.
And everything that's presented in the Prager University videos, it's all documented. There's citations. So we're talking about facts that are being suppressed.
Right. This is not someone just sitting down behind a camera and giving their thoughts.
Right. And it's not mean-spirited information. I mean, it's just... it's facts presented in a very engaging way because the videos are animated.
Well, first off, I've never seen you be anything but civil and polite and kind. So I don't think you have it within you to be that way. It is the truth that's within you that frightens those on the left.
And the messenger. In fact, I've had a black student tell me that it's not what I say that is so offensive. It's the fact that it's coming from a black woman, that if it were a white male or someone else, that it would not be offensive.
Well, let me tell you what, Dr. Carol Swain, you always have a platform here at Washington Watch. I will never cut you off. Now, breaks come up, and we both get cut off, but I will never cut you off here at Washington Watch. So good to have you.
Thank you.
And keep up the good work. A lot of people hear what you say. They appreciate what you say, and you are changing hearts and minds with the truth.
Thank you.
Dr. Carol Swain, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. A great American, and grateful for her voice out there speaking the truth. So I want to encourage you to check that out. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and track her down. Get on her Facebook page, get on her Twitter page, and keep up with her. And by all means, if you're listening, send her a note and tell her how much you appreciated hearing her here on Washington Watch. All right, still to come. We're going to be joined by my good friend Joel Rosenberg. Putin, president of Russia today, putting out a very threatening message. And also coming up next week, Joel is releasing a new book, The Kremlin Conspiracy. Now, I've long joked with him that he has this kind of prophetic edge. He writes a book, and then all of a sudden something happens. Well, we're going to talk with him about that when we return here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come right after this.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Again, if you're just joining us, you're hearing a little noise in the background. That's not my team running around. That is participants here at the National Religious Broadcasters. We're live from the convention floor here at the National Religious Broadcasters in Nashville, Tennessee. Communicators from all across the country. We're also on Facebook Live, so we want to welcome back our viewers there on Facebook Live. All right, Russia has tested an array of new strategic nuclear weapons that can't be intercepted. Now, President Vladimir Putin announced today in a fiery speech marking a technological breakthrough that could dramatically increase Russia's military capability, boost the Kremlin's global position, and also raise Western concerns about a potential new arms race in the 21st century. With us now, Joel Rosenberg, a New York Times bestselling author, great friend, founder of the Joshua Fund, also a Israeli citizen who's actually going to be with us on our trip to Israel coming up in April. And he also has a new book out. For those on Facebook, I'm going to hold it up. I've already read the book from cover to cover. And
you're having me on anyway.
I'm having you on anyway because I'm hoping you're not a prophet. Because it's fascinating. We've joked about this before, but all of your other books were about the Middle East. And now, for some reason, you decided to write a book about Russia. And we see Vladimir Putin really following almost the storyline.
Well, yeah, that is a little creepy. As you know, I've been 17 years. I've been writing political thrillers about the threat of radical Islamism, apocalyptic trend lines in the Middle East, and the threat that all poses to the United States, Israel, our Arab allies, Europe, and the world. But I needed to just reshuffle the deck personally, professionally. Like,
you got
enough
tired.
Already. You know, I mean, I did take a break to write about the Nazis once, and that was grim. But one of the, as you know, the theme of the novels is to misunderstand the nature and threat
right.
of evil is to risk getting blindsided by
right.
it. And
Which you don't. There's so many historical examples of that. You don't have to work hard to find a storyline.
Yeah, no, exactly. But we were blindsided by on December 7th, 1941, by an Imperial Japan that we didn't think really wanted to hit us. We thought they were bad, but we've got, you know, we were blindsided by Saddam Hussein invading Kuwait. Obviously, 9/11. But evil doesn't only reside in the hearts and minds of radical Islamism. And in fact, it was the evil empire of the Soviet Union that defined evil for 70 years, and it was defined by, you know, President Ronald Reagan. But in many ways, Americans generally, conservatives, even evangelicals, I think, are so focused now on the threat of in the Middle East from radical Islam that we may not be focusing enough on a threat of, like, someone like Vladimir Putin.
I know that has been missed a lot in Washington, D.C. There's not been a lot of talk about that. I remember this, watching it very closely. When he was up for confirmation for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Dunford, was before the Senate Armed Service Committee. And at that point, he said that Russia was the greatest threat, military threat, to the United States. Of course, everybody was thinking of the Middle East, thinking of radical Islam.
Right, that seems surprising.
Right.
That was just a few months, you know, it was just last year.
And so nobody really paid attention. But then this last month, he is now the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, he was in Europe, and he said that Russia poses the greatest threat to Europe and NATO as well.
Yeah. That's right.
He gets that, apparently.
That's right. And now this goes to the interesting dynamic related to President Trump. President Trump only mentioned Russia one time in the State of the Union address. But, of course, he's under a lot of criticism, even allegation, that he's somehow working with Russia. Now, I don't presume anything but innocence on him. I certainly hope not. And certainly nothing's been proven. But what has been proven is that Russia's trying to subvert our elections. They are invading their neighbors. They're building a new wave of nuclear weapons. What is a little bit disconcerting, I will just say, is not President Trump's policies. He's urging NATO to spend more, and they are. He's rebuilding the American military. It's not his personnel. He's putting in Secretary Jim Mattis, who was, you know, the head of NATO. Mike Pence obviously is a serious guy when it comes to Russia. Mike Pompeo at CIA. So if he's really a squish on all this, it doesn't make sense with policy or personnel. But his language is odd because he's tough on Russia. He's tough on China, North Korea, Iran, Nancy Pelosi. But he can't seem to find a tough word to say about Vladimir Putin. And that is disconcerting. And I can't explain it, but it just goes, there's a general sense in Washington that we're so focused on other things. I think we are missing the fact that Vladimir Putin is more dangerous to us than radical Islam. He has 7,000 nuclear warheads. He has the missiles to deliver them. Whether this is true or not, and it very well may be true, but I don't know it yet that he can get these missiles past us. The point is, he has invaded Georgia. He's invaded Ukraine. He's invaded Syria. And nobody's stopping him. And it's like, you know, you give a mouse a cookie, he wants a glass of milk. He's had the whole bag of Oreos. And he's not full.
And he's coming for the cow. All right. I got a question for you when we come back. We're up against a break. But could it be that that's maybe part of this conspiracy with the whole Russia, that they've put the administration into a posture that it's hard for them to talk about Russia and challenge Russia because of the allegations of this collaboration? We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. You're listening to Washington Watch. My guest, Joel Rosenberg, best-selling author and all-around great guy. We're going to finish our conversation when we return. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come right after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Tony Perkins here. We are broadcasting live from the National Religious Broadcasters here in Nashville, Tennessee. We're on the convention floor, so you hear a lot of background noise. That's folks going to the various booths that are here, a lot of displays, a lot of broadcasters, just a lot of activity taking place here. It's always great to come here once a year and connect with various Christian broadcasters. And again, we welcome our Facebook Live audience that is watching. All right, my guest is Joel Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author. And he's we were just talking about before the break. He's had a series. How many in that previous series of novels that you did?
Well, the ISIS series was a trilogy, but I've had written 12 previous novels altogether. This is the 13th.
How many of those were focused on the Middle East?
All but one.
Okay. So he decides to change, and all of those books, every time I would read one of them, it's like I would pick up the paper the next day and I say, oh, wait a minute, what's this? This is what Joel was writing about in his book. Well, now he decided to switch and write about Russia, and today, the book isn't even out yet. It comes out Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Today, Vladimir Putin, in his State of the Union address, State of the Demagogue address, whatever
the Federation,
he calls it.
State of the Tyranny. Actually,
it is kind of hearkening back to
this was the most aggressive speech that he's given.
Yeah,
maybe ever, and it comes at a time he's coming up on elections.
Yeah,
March 18th, and actually elections were not legally scheduled for March 18th. They changed it to be on March 18th. Why? Because that's the 3-year anniversary of Putin annexing southern Ukraine, Crimea, into the Russian Federation. Today is actually the 3-year anniversary of the invasion. So this is a man who keeps invading. He takes 20% of the Republic of Georgia during the Olympics in 2008. Then in 2014, he goes and he grabs southern Ukraine. Then a few weeks later, he grabs the eastern portion of Ukraine, what's known as the Donbas region. He sends military forces into Syria to help Bashar al-Assad, the butcher of Damascus, to massacre hundreds of thousands of people, even using chemical weapons. And he's working closely with Iran. He sells weapons to Iran. He sells weapons to North Korea. This is a serious player who's our most serious enemy, and yet nobody's stopping him. And we were talking before the break, it's just a little odd. And I would say personally disconcerting that President Trump, who is doing well in many areas, and I wasn't sure he would, but he has, certainly in the pro-life area, pro-Israel, he's rebuilding the military, but he will not say a tough word about Vladimir Putin. He says tougher language about Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, than he does about Vladimir Putin. And there's something, I'm not saying it's criminal or corrupt, I'm just saying it's weird when you've got a man who's a monster occupying Moscow.
So Vladimir Putin saying basically to the West, watch me, look what I'm doing, you cannot ignore me.
Yeah. He said in the speech, Russia cannot be contained, which means he's expanding. He's looking to expand his influence and his power. He doesn't have to grab territory all the time, but he does want to blackmail the people around him. He's a mafia boss. He's a mafia thug with 7,000 nuclear warheads.
Well, Joel, I mean, if he's not being who's he being checked by? Why is he?
Nobody.
I get the political side of this, that he's, you know, appealing to that nationalistic vote, trying to
keep people's Russian people's attention off their miserable life conditions.
The fact that they don't have the food and the basic necessities of life because everything's being funneled into their military.
Yeah.
So I get that aspect. But since the United States is really the only rival that they have, and we're not really challenging them, then what's all this noise about?
Well, this is interesting, and it actually goes to the heart of the novel, The Kremlin Conspiracy, because I take Putin's name out, I change some things, because I don't want people to get tripped up in the novel by Putin. It just gets a little confusing. But I have somebody rising, and the character in the novel, I would say, reflects my view of Putin to a degree, and that's this. Putin, while he was born and raised in the communist system under the Soviet Union, was a KGB operative, became the head of the new version of the KGB, the FSB. He is not a communist. He's not a Marxist-Leninist. He's not an ideologue. I believe he's a czar in his mind, in his heart. My family were Russian Orthodox, or they were Orthodox Jews from Russia that escaped from the czar, Nicholas II, because of the evil that he was doing to the Jewish people. The czars, the last czar was assassinated, and then there was the Russian Revolution.
Right.
But the czars were imperialists. They believed in expanding the territory and the influence of Mother Russia and rebuilding the glory of Mother Russia. And this is what Putin in his heart feels has been, that Russia has been humiliated, it's been emasculated, has been the collapse of the Soviet Union, he once said, was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. Now, you and I would say the Holocaust, the entire World War II, 50 million people dead, the death of 3 million in Cambodia, Rwanda. I mean, you can think of a lot of geopolitical catastrophes in the world. The collapse of the evil empire was not one of them, but that's how Putin sees it. And I believe he's looking to... I think he's evil at his core, and he's trying to rebuild this empire, but he's checked by KGB instinct, which is he expects a reaction. He doesn't get it. He takes part of Georgia. He expects the world to act, and they don't. He keeps moving, and nobody's stopping him. And this is why in the novel, again, switching from fact to fiction, in the novel, my Russian leader decides he's going to go grab one, two, or three of the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. They're all NATO allies since 2004. The danger of it, the gamble of this Russian leader is if he went and in 96 hours sent 100,000 troops in and grabbed one or three of these, the question becomes, what is the United States, what is NATO going to do? Are we really going to go to war, possibly nuclear war, with Russia for one, two, or three countries that most Americans can't pin on a map? Now, if we don't, that's the end of NATO. You can't have a mutual defense pact when you don't defend anybody. So the gamble would be, nobody's going to stop him. And then he is the superpower of the world, even though he's not as strong economically, politically, militarily as us. But now who's going to stop him? That's the risk. And I use fiction in a sense to project a war game to take you into something that's horrible, because it hasn't happened yet.
I mean, I see him, having read the novel, listening to your conversation, having the conversation here, I do see him as kind of having the vision of the czars of Mother Russia, but having the tactics of the communists.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there were some freedoms in respect of human life under the czars, but I think it's getting... this could be a very dangerous place.
It's incredibly dangerous, especially if we're not paying attention. Here's the one policy thing that should be done. I actually personally don't believe the United States would go to war to rescue Estonia, even though, they merit it.
I mean, but the president in the past, he's kind of changed his tune a little bit, but has not been a big fan of NATO.
Or Article 5 at the core of it. So the only way to be
explain it to Article 5.
Article 5 is the element within the NATO North Atlantic Treaty Organization
compact
that says that if one country gets attacked, it's like everybody getting attacked, and we all go to battle stations and we rescue that country back.
Yeah.
Or defend it, at least. So if you don't defend one, the whole compact falls apart. And now everybody's scared, and everyone's going to start moving into the Russian camp because they're going to fear...
shift of political power.
Absolutely. And not just for Eastern or Central Europe. Now you'll have Asia, the Middle East, kowtowing. Many countries will think, this guy, no one's going to stop him. If the U.S. doesn't, if NATO doesn't, we little country, that's a threat to Israel. It's a threat to our Arab allies. It's a threat to Japan and the rest. So the only way to be sure that that Putin wouldn't do this in real life is to have enough deterrent force in those three Baltic states that the speed bump is so high it's not worth it. He'll look elsewhere, right? We don't have a treaty with Finland. He could go grab Finland, and what are we going to do about it? We don't have a treaty with the Ukraine. That's why, and we don't have a treaty with Georgia. Those were the two countries in 2004 that were applying for citizenship, and we kicked the can down the road. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying we do have alliances, NATO alliances, with the Baltic states. By the way, April 3rd, all three Baltic leaders are coming for a summit with President Trump. So in the next month, we have the opportunity to raise the consciousness of Congress, of the administration, and say, listen, there are fewer than 5,000 NATO forces combined in the Enhanced Forward Presence operation in those three Baltic states. It's not enough. We've got to increase it to make sure there's not a temptation that he goes, boom, let's grab it.
Yeah, and the previous administration even lowered our defenses even more.
Yeah, we had 2.5 years ago, we had 100 NATO forces in the countries combined. That's why they created at the end of the Obama administration, and to the Trump administration's credit, they have supported enhanced forward presence. That's the idea of getting more forces and pre-positioning some materials. I don't think 5,000 troops is enough when you got 100,000 Russians on the other side.
But our challenge is that we have a military that has a strength that is pre-World War II. We are militarily challenged in this nation, and being able to mobilize the number of troops that would be needed.
That's true, but if you've got tanks and personnel in Germany and other places in Europe, which are not going to be invaded anytime that we can foresee, you know, Putin's not doesn't want to occupy Berlin. What he wants is to get everyone to bow down to him. Figuratively, if not literally.
Yeah.
So he's looking for small targets, and if he can get one... So, in other words, if you don't pre-position what you have in the places where they're needed, you're opening yourself for a world of hurt.
But, Joel, to the point of the president about, you know, strength, trying to rebuild our military, I think it's an enticement for Putin if America is militarily weak.
Yes.
You know, not just our presence in Europe, but just our overall weakness. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. We are broadcasting live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. In fact, we're on the convention floor i.e. the noise in the background. Joel Rosenberg, New York Times
best-selling
author. Yes, the buzz, and it's all about the new book coming out.
I wish, but we're not quite there yet.
It's coming out next Tuesday, The Kremlin Conspiracy, to our friends on Facebook Live. There it is. There's Joel.
Hardcover, audio, and ebook. They're all will be coming out that day.
I mean, I don't do this often because I have a stack of books that people send me, and trying to read a book before I actually do the interview is almost impossible. So I'm backlogged 10 years. By the time I get to it, nobody wants to do the interview. I haven't figured
and
that out.
And 9 years of those are my books, so, you know.
But this one I read cover to cover.
Thank you.
I mean, I had a hard time putting it down. And I guess part of it was because the hero of the story was a Marine veteran.
Yeah, Jerry Boykin is going to be upset with that, but what can I do? You know,
well, that's all right. He'll get over it. He can write his own novel. Tell us about the book. Where can folks get it?
Yeah, you can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Lifeway, any of the Christian or secular bookstores. Online is usually the cheapest, but like I said, it's hardcover, audio. I love getting books on audio in part when I'm driving. I can pick up stuff that I just
this is one of those. It's a story, so it's easy, but it's also a very good read. I think all but two of the others I've done on audio. This one I read because I had the pre-advanced copy, and so I read it. It's one of those. It's hard to put down. It's well done.
Well, I believe that I try to write short chapters, and they're like Pringles.
I want
people cursing me at 5 a.m. on Twitter, going, "I got to get up in an hour, and you kept me up all night." Then I know I've held. Look, people don't have the discretionary time or money to go waste on something that doesn't earn their attention every moment, and but also has a spiritual journey in it, and
it does.
Several other elements.
It's all good. I like to take a break from some of the. I'm actually reading a book on the Middle East and in Islam, and so this was kind of a nice break.
go to
Russia.
I saw Vice President Pence. He's been a fan of the books and a personal friend for a long time. I saw him at this pro-life lunch here at NRB, and he gave me a hug, and then he said, "Where's my book?" And I know it's coming out, and I said, "I sent it through a friend, a mutual friend." He goes, "They didn't give it to me. They must be reading." I said, "Well, I'll send it to a different friend, and we'll get it to you." But yeah, it's fun to see how people, world leaders, senators, governors, as well as people all over the country. Are enjoying something like this, and I appreciate that you're one of them.
Well, I know your novels have actually opened many doors around the world.
You and I had lunch with the King of Jordan, who has read all three of the last series now, and one of his aides asked me, "Can we get the next one?" Absolutely. So it's on its way.
Joel Rosenberg, as always, great to talk with you, my friend.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Tony.
And folks, I want to encourage you to get the book. The Kremlin Conspiracy comes out Tuesday. It really is. It's a great read. And Joel, if I don't see, I'm going to stick my head in your general session in the morning.
Thank you.
But look forward to seeing you in Israel.
And we need to be praying. Yes, thank you. I look forward to that. And we also need to be praying for the people of Russia, because we didn't say, we don't have time now, but Putin has outlawed evangelism.
Yeah.
In Russia, you can't share the gospel. You can't invite a friend to church. You can't even share the gospel in your home now under Vladimir Putin. This is evil, and it's getting worse.
That's that narrow window. You know, when it was, when the wall came down, everybody thought, well, the door is always going to be open, and it is now shut. Same thing here in the United States. Don't think the door is always going to be open. Joel Rosenberg,
thanks for what you do.
Good to be with you, my
Thank
friend.
You.
All right, folks, great to have you with us as well. Let me encourage you to check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over to everything we talked about today. But also, let me leave you with this. The encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.